It feels like progress in AI is being made very quickly. Has it always been this way and people didn't realize it, or has there been anything special in the last year or two?
Yeah. I think it's unprecedented. It hasn't been that way for a while now. Probably the last couple of years have been much, much faster than what has been till now. Primarily because of a couple of organizations, OpenAI being one of them. And yeah, the rate now is at a pace which probably not just AI, but any technology has not seen for about 20 years. Probably the last thing which was so major was the computer itself or maybe cloud. But yeah, AI has not been at this pace for forever.
I think when AlexNet was released in 2012, I think that was also a significant moment. I mean, from 2012 up until 2016, maybe that phase also was pretty dramatic. But I don't think, like, in terms of like text and ChatGPT or like chatbots, I think people got to interact with the systems. But when AlexNet came out and, you know, they had like when Vision was doing pretty well, I don't think there was a public facing interface which people could interact with, and people didn't really realize like what was going on. So I think ChatGPT being released to the public also played a huge role in like letting the public know what progress is being made. No,
see, there are always two aspects to it, right? One is the technology itself, and second is what the adoption around that is, right? ChatGPT definitely helped with the adoption of the technology. But a lot of these models, right? So these are, for example, GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, which is actually based on this architecture called Transformers. And this Transformer architecture itself came in 2017. So that's why while AlexNet and all these ResNet did help, they were just on one particular task, which was image captioning and around that. Whereas also these were not generational things as such, right? These were like captioning, and these were very restrictive. What GPT promises you is a future which is multimodal entirely, right? For example, GPT-4 is multimodal. It is not just converting text to text, but it can also take images and input. And it is a much more smarter system in general. Depends on how you define smart, but overall, I don't think that. I mean, personally, because I have been in this space for a while, right? Probably I started my ML journey in 2014. I haven't felt such overwhelming progress being done. Like if you open Twitter every day, you would see that something new has come up. And that is not just because of ChatGPT that you feel that way. This is the rapid amount of innovation that's happening, especially with all these large language models, right? So now every company is building their own LLMs to say, right? OpenAI has one. OpenAI obviously has a very strong collaboration with Microsoft, so that becomes that. Google has their own thing. Facebook has their own thing. There are a few startups which have their own thing, right? And this last couple of weeks where OpenAI actually launched GPT-4, basically Google also launched their own version of this thing called Palm API. Plus a company that Google has invested in, which is called Anthropic. They launched their own chatbot called Cohere. I don't remember the name.
Claude, I think.
Yeah, Claude. So, yeah, it's definitely a rate that has not been there before. And mostly triggered because of the Transformer architecture. Obviously, we have built on that. But Transformers have played a huge role in building all this.
Do you think Google missed the boat on this? I mean, you mentioned the Attention paper, right? Which came out in 2017, I think, by the Google Brain team.
Yeah.
They invented the technology. They were sitting on the technology, and I think even last year in 2022, I think there was some speculation that one of the Google engineers made that the Lambda
yeah.
model was sentient per se. So it feels like they had this tech. It feels like they were sitting on it. But do you think that they didn't realize what they had, and you know, they were a little too cautious with the tech per se?
That is definitely true. I think not so much on miss the boat part, but that they were too cautious, and they probably have to be, because when Bing launched their chat interface, right, they had to face a lot of these problems because the system went kind of out of control. It started threatening people. It started sending messages which were off the script, right? And as a company, Google was probably too careful that it did not want such incidents. I wouldn't say they have missed the boat yet, because the question still remains as to how exactly will people start making money off this, right? Especially in search, because the way Google makes money, you search for something, you show these blue links, then you click on one of these links, and if these are a sponsored or advertised link, they get money off it, right? But in a chatbot kind of an interface, where do you insert the ads? So even if Google has the tech, the business challenge still remains for them as to how do they make money off it, right? Microsoft, on the other hand, I mean, Bing is a product which they don't really care if they lose money on. It's not really their cash cow. And Satya Nadella, in one of his interviews, also said, we are okay with losing money out on it as long as we force that AI moves forward, right? And that's why I think it's not so much about the tech being there. And I don't think Google has still figured out how do they make money off it, because their primary thing is still search, right? Most of the revenue comes from search. And with these LLM kind of searches, the revenue from there is going to go down.
It feels like with the ChatGPT has a subscription model, no? I mean, I'm not sure if it'll scale globally, like the subscription of $20, paying $20 for search. Any idea, like, you touched upon this, but any idea how this could be monetizable? I mean,
So subscription is definitely not something which ever scales, right? People don't want to pay for things. And that,
especially $20, I mean.
Yeah, and in India, $20 is huge, right? Maybe if they introduce some sort of purchasing power parity parameters, even then it's probably too high. People wouldn't pay. But see, you have to make ways for people to pay without realizing that they are paying, right? And for example, ads is one of these things. So yeah, I mean, directly, I don't think any of the companies have figured out how do they make money off search. But you potentially could, for example, Microsoft has introduced this thing called Copilot in all its suite, right? Excel, PowerPoint, all these things, right? And then you could potentially put that on a subscription, but that is for enterprises. That is how you make money. But Microsoft has been an enterprise business forever, right? They make money off companies and not really of end users. So for a company like that, it's probably much easier to monetize. For a company like Google, yeah, I don't see a very clean, straightforward way for them to maintain their search revenues along with adopting this latest. At least I don't see what they could do.
So I think no matter how this plays out, I mean, Google's search dominance, I mean, they may still hold the search dominance, but the money that they make from search is probably going to come down, no?
Yeah, but also because there are two things to that. That Google makes money primarily of things which are buying intent oriented, right? For example, if I say hotels in Bangalore, right? There you see a lot of these blocks on the top where you could click and make money, right? So Google probably makes more money of those rather than stuff like who is the Prime Minister of India and all these kinds of queries, right? So that is why there is a cost associated with each keyword. So they might still continue to make money because ChatGPT or any of these other platforms aren't really supporting this kind of thing yet. The data that they have, the recency of the data, right? They don't have it yet. But at the same time, I think OpenAI is working towards that. A couple of days back, they introduced something called plugins, which you basically hook on to ChatGPT. And then instead of their data, you could also potentially search across the data that the plugin has. For example, Instacart has a plugin. You have a plugin for kayak.com, right? So there's a Shopify plugin. So now I don't need to go to Shopify and search for stuff. I could just add the Shopify plugin to my ChatGPT. I could search for, I'm looking for this. Can you suggest me relevant stuff? Right? So that is also going to, again, take some money away from Google. So it's an uphill battle for them, that is for sure.
On the point of, you know, how Google was very what is that? A little restricted about, you know, playing it safe. I think that's the cost of being a big company. No, I mean, when you're the underdog, you don't really have to, you don't really care what you do. I mean, you're on the losing side of the battle, so you can experiment as much as you want. And I think if you're already first in the race, you don't want to really experiment a lot with your strategy and, you know, fuck up and lose your market cap or whatever. I think that's a big cost of being a big tech company, I suppose.
That is true, but then Microsoft is as big a company as Google, but it hasn't slowed
down. But not in terms of search, right? I mean, yeah.
Not in terms of search, but overall, the way they have been shipping out stuff, right? You see Microsoft coming up with a new release every day. And they have the same problems, right? They have to be sure that there are no legal issues, compliance issues, and all that are happening. So, and I mean, honestly, because I have worked at Microsoft for a very long time, I was there for about 5.5-6 years. I never felt Microsoft as an organization will ever ship this fast. It's astounding that they have been able to just keep integrating AI and just moving so fast, right? Yeah, well, search is something they could still lose out on, but imagine that potentially something just goes wrong. Microsoft as a company gets sued, right? It's not as if that the big organization itself is going to get affected. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's the top-down thing that flows, right? Maybe the top leadership at Microsoft has been much more proactive. And honestly, their partnership with OpenAI helps a lot, right? They got access to GPT-4 a year back itself. So that's definitely something which they can test out and innovate, right? And then maybe they release it because they already have spent enough time with it, but people just don't know that because they haven't gotten access to those kind of models yet.
I really like the, the chat feature on in Google, I mean, in Bing is I'm not a huge fan of the Bing chat feature. I prefer ChatGPT to Bing, and plus I prefer Google search to Bing ChatGPT as well, but that is my preference. What I really like about Edge chat GPT integration is the, I don't know if you've seen the browser on the right side, there is this sidebar which opens up and it goes through the text and summarizes the text. It's not the best, but I think it's pretty useful when, if you can go through I use it mostly when I'm reading a paper or something. So quickly, if you want to get a quick summarization or key points or what are the main arguments in the paper, and if it's like a 6-page PDF, I think that's very, very helpful. But I have to say, the summarization is not that great, and the questions, like if you probe, it's not very good. But since it's only been released like a month back, I feel in the next 6 months or 1 year, it's going to be like really, really good.
Yeah, I mean these. I don't think that is a, yeah, while the current experience might not be great, think of it whether the problem statement is getting validated, which it clearly is, and they'll keep on improving the model side. So GPT-4 will come, GPT-5 will come, and that would keep evolving. So I don't think the relevance or the qualities will be a really big problem, especially here. That will definitely go off. And that is true that people do prefer ChatGPT instead of Bing. But that's, again, an early adopter kind of a demographic like you and me, right? I mean, a majority of the people are still not aware of what ChatGPT is or what AI is, right? Their usual behavior is to just go and type search in Bing.
But do you think that, because I used to think that as well, but I heard that ChatGPT has over 100 million users, which is non-trivial, I feel.
But 100 million is still a very small number if you compare it to the amount of people that are there in the world, right? Let's say internet users, right? India itself has 500 million internet users. So imagine that number compared to that. So it's still, I think it's still early times. The way I feel sometimes is that because I live in a very tech bubble kind of an environment, I feel that everyone is using it, everyone is trying to do it. But if I just step outside for a while and talk to someone, like talk to, let's say, an SME business and ask them, what do you think AI is going to do to you? They're like, okay, what is AI? We don't care. We don't know, right? So
really, it's that. Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, it's that.
Yeah. My parents know there's something called ChatGPT. They know something is happening, but they don't really care so much about going on ChatGPT and then doing it, right? If it's something which is ready, their usual behavior patterns are very difficult to disturb, right? For them, search is still primarily either you just search on Google or like a voice-based thing, right? For them, ChatGPT is still something which they haven't explored. And also because, see, you have to make an account on that, and that is very hard. I mean, imagine someone who is not really a tech-first person, right? You have to create an account on OpenAI. Only then you get access to ChatGPT Playground, right? Which is, again, a very high tech barrier. But that would go, eventually that would reduce. But I don't think that, also when this users is a very bad number to code, right? You have to see how many of them are DAUs, how many of them are MAUs, and then take a call accordingly. There might be people who just got on the hype and, okay, what is this? Let me just open it and see, right? But still feel it's early days. It's going to increase, but right now it's probably early days.
On the consumer adoption side, I mean, this is a slight digression in the sense that, so TikTok is banned in India, but so I was one of those guys who never took TikTok seriously, but I'm a huge fan of TikTok right now. So the way I got into TikTok was when my mom started using it. So the litmus test for me, if something is adopted, is when my mother uses it, because, you know, they end up using the most default things available on the phone. And, you know, they know what Google search is, they know what WhatsApp is. They don't want to know anything else in the world. So when my mom installed TikTok and was using it, TikTok, that's when I was like, you know, what is this? I need to get on this app. And I completely fell in love with it. Yeah. So, you know, if my mom starts using ChatGPT, then maybe it's really like, you know, yeah, it's a sign of widespread adoption.
Yeah. I think what they would eventually end up doing is use these Google... See, honestly, it's a lot about the ecosystem play. A lot of people in India actually have Android phones, right? And Google owns the real estate there. They could mold the user behavior they want to, right? That's why it's very hard for ChatGPT or anyone else to really break into it, because if my Android phone comes pre-installed with a Google Bard, right, which is their version of LLM, why would I go to ChatGPT and do all that extra effort, right? That's also a reason why a lot of people still used Edge, because that came pre-installed, right? And people didn't really have the understanding or even the need to really go download Chrome and then start using it. And that's how Bing also gets a lot of its search query volume, because Edge has Bing as their default search engine, and people are like, okay, we don't care. We are probably not even realizing that this is not Google, right? So that is how this whole ecosystem place comes, right? And that's why companies like Microsoft are very strongly poised to keep getting better and get better, because they own the distribution. They own. So there are a lot of these companies which tried to do what Microsoft did in the last launch, right? They built tools which could transcribe your meetings, which could summarize your minutes of meetings, send it across, create tasks out of it. And then suddenly Microsoft Teams launches, which does all this, right? And all the startups that are then left redundant. Because why am I going to install a plugin when the default itself comes with that? Similarly, there are a lot of these platforms or startups which are working on how do I make your emails better? I could just use it as a plugin. I could just type and the email gets generated. Similarly, my Word document, I could just put in hints. So basically integrating, let's say, ChatGPT kind of things into these applications, right? But then Microsoft did it. And now all these companies have to, I mean, essentially shut down, because there's nothing that they could do, right? Because Microsoft owns the distribution, right? So
I think a similar thing happened with Slack, right? I mean, Slack, I think, no? I think Microsoft introduced an app which is similar. I don't know the whole story, but something similar to Slack. And I think it had...
Microsoft
I think
it was able to get fairly similar to Slack.
And I think it was able to get, I don't know, more than 100 million users in a few... I'm wrong with the number here, but maybe a few weeks or months. I think the total number of users is greater than Slack as well. So... the power of ecosystem is pretty intense. Yeah, no? I mean, yeah. Can't be underestimated. Yeah.
Always the question is, I mean, when a startup starts building, right, it's that thing that we would move fast and move faster than the incumbents, precisely because of the reasons you had talked about earlier, right? And we would be able to gain the market share. But Microsoft is just not letting people do it. They're just shipping everything every day. And yeah, it's very difficult, honestly, for startups to build, because you don't know what's going to happen. You have to be sure that there is no platform dependency for you, because otherwise your whole product can just be left redundant in a day.
just on a comment on Bing. I mean, Bing is not a small. I mean, compared to Google, obviously, it appears small. But if you consider it as a standalone business, it's a non-trivial business, right? I mean, I think it made revenues of $15 billion. I think.
Yeah,
if I'm
Bing
not wrong.
Has more revenue than Adobe as a company, so yeah, it's not a small business.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's very difficult to, like, when you see dominance of Google everywhere, you think like who the fuck is using Bing? But when you go through the numbers, it's a different picture altogether.
Yeah.
What do you make of? So I was reading some news reports about some people. I mean, this is speculation, but some news reports about Sundar having to step down, or Sundar. It's better if Sundar steps down, because I think the argument was that he's a peacetime CEO. Like, he was doing well during peacetime. And now this is, because of the things that are happening and the rate at which they're happening, it's better if we get a different leader, helming Google. What are your thoughts on, Google management, Sundar?
Way above my pay grade, man. Can't comment. Can't really. I don't know if they have a replacement also, right? There were reports that one of the original founders might step in. That was also one of the alternatives that people suggested. Sometimes a change of management does help, but again, they have to see if they have someone who can potentially navigate through these situations, right? Satya Nadella has done a great job at it, no question around that. But I think, like I said, way above my pay grade. Can't really say if that's going to help them or they even have the personnel to replace them, right? But replace him.
Mm-hmm. Initially, it was, right now OpenAI is all the buzz. But I think a few years back, it was DeepMind that was all the buzz. Do you think, OpenAI has successfully, eclipsed DeepMind as the leading AI tech, or is it because of the consumer app, because of the consumer side tech that, OpenAI is facing, OpenAI is getting more publicity than DeepMind, and DeepMind is still doing and still one of the most leading researchers or leading labs in the world?
No, I think OpenAI has, in fact, succeeded them. A lot of people, there's always a lot of this flux that keeps happening from one of these research labs to another. And a lot of people actually moved from DeepMind to OpenAI. In terms of tech, I think OpenAI is now the leading authority, at least for the generative stuff. Maybe there are some products, or maybe there is some tech that that DeepMind is better at. For example, the Transformers paper was, I think, DeepMind or Google Brain, one of these two, right? So that way, they were the leading authority back then. But yeah, also depends on what you consider as a leading authority, right? Because this is a problem statement which is very much in news these days. So starts feeling that OpenAI is probably the pioneer in the research labs, right? But maybe there is some other stuff like bioinformatics, stuff like that. Maybe something which actually DeepMind is better at, right? But in the generative stuff, OpenAI is hands down the leader in terms of the quality and the end quality of the results, but also in terms of the tech that they have, right? But a very interesting question that comes here is, I don't know if you read the GPT-4 paper, but they have not mentioned any of the model details there. None of them, how many model parameters are there, what exactly is the model and all that. Because obviously they said that there's competition and you want to be cognizant of that, which is kind of alarming also at the same time, because if you believe the conspiracy theorists, you should make sure that AI does not really get out of your hands, right? And if it's just known to a few people, that might potentially be a problem later. But now it has become like a LLM war, right? So, and everyone is holding their cards close to their chest. But yeah, in terms to answer your question.
Is it everyone? Is it everyone though? Or, I feel, I'm not too sure about this, but I think Google in general publishes a lot of their research. No, I think this trend of closing keeping your research to yourself. I think that whole trend was started by OpenAI.
Not really. So Google publishes a lot of things. In fact, Microsoft's research thing, which is MSR, they publish a lot of things. Facebook publishes a lot of things. Apple is the only company which does not publish a lot of its internal reports, and even now they are nowhere to be found. Right, people don't know what they're doing. But see, OpenAI was intended to be a non-profit organization, right? Now it's a little bit muddy, and that's why Elon Musk keeps complaining on Twitter all the time that this is not the OpenAI that he founded, right? That's probably more like that, and not really that Google is publishing and OpenAI is not publishing. It's probably, yeah, you want to probably keep your secrets closer. If there's something which is really proprietary about your models and which can be replicated, why would you not try and protect it, right? I mean, that's where the whole, that's the difference between, let's say, being a researcher in academia versus being a researcher in a industry, right? You need to know that there are some things you could reveal and some things that you have to keep as a company's trade secrets, right? Maybe it's that.
I'm not too sold on that. I mean, I feel, what is that? Can you, do you have an example in mind where Google or Facebook might have some tech that, you know, some research that they might have guarded closely? Because the way I think about this is, OpenAI has been very, OpenAI has been very, and the name, the whole name, it being, it is such a, anyway, so I feel they've been very militant in terms of guarding their, maybe I do agree with you that it does make, I mean, if it's a business case that you're trying to pursue, then probably makes a lot of sense to maybe, but I do feel like there is some hypocrisy here in the sense that, you know, they benefited greatly from open research that was being conducted. And now that, you know, you have something with you, it does feel a little hypocritical, but, you know, maybe that's what business is. And, you know, maybe,
yeah.
I just want to understand it.
No, that is true. I mean, the fact that you are ultimately building on someone else's research, right? For example, Transformers, the paper is actually a Google research lab paper, right? But I mean, Google hasn't revealed its proprietary search algorithm yet, right? They believe it's their secret sauce. Why would, if they do it, then Bing could copy it potentially, right? So you have to be sure that, yeah, I don't know where the distinction lies between, okay, this I can just let people build on this versus, no, this is my trade secret, I have to protect it, right? That's where the whole open source thing also comes in, right? Android itself was open source, and that's why it gained a lot of this adoption. Whereas Microsoft just could not with their operating system on phone, right? Because Google just made their thing open source and people could just keep building apps on it, and that's how it gained this much market share, right? Yeah, I mean,
also it could be, maybe, I mean, I'm speculating here, but maybe when Google released the attention paper, maybe they didn't really know what they were sitting on, you know? I mean, they didn't really, I'm not too sure, but maybe they didn't see the potential of where this could lead. And, you know, maybe I think they saw this was just an incremental step in translation or captioning, etc. But I think they didn't see what could be done with this. And in a way, I think that's good. I mean, you know, you need some disruption now and then.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, I'm sure they did not know that this paper is going to be as big as what it is now, right? I mean, everything is transformers now. Everything is now just built on a different kind of a transformer, right? Whether that be, I mean, this GPT is one, but there are also these BERT and all these other things, which are also eventually transformers. So the architecture, the seminal information in that architecture is now just used everywhere. And yeah, I mean, obviously the authors did not know. The authors are also doing something else now. Maybe there are a few who are still part of Google, but a lot of them have left and started their own companies. And yeah, I'm sure they are considered to be the pioneers of that, right? And that also reflects the amount of funding their companies are getting. So yeah, I'm sure they are happy with what they did.
So one thing I didn't understand with OpenAI was it was started as a nonprofit, and I think Elon put, you know, you were saying how Elon was complaining about OpenAI. You know, some aspect where I can sympathize with him is I heard he put in about 100 million of his money in OpenAI as one of the first investors. And now the company is turned for profit. And I think it has a market cap of about 30 billion, last I heard. And he has no stake in it. He's not an investor. That is very weird to me. Talk about putting 100 million and you don't have any equity in the company. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the actual organizational structure there, but OpenAI also has a for-profit subsidiary, which is called OpenAI LP, which is actually a for-profit thing. So maybe, Microsoft has definitely invested in the LP wala thing. So they have invested in the for-profit thing. I'm not sure where Elon's stake was or where it is now. But I'm sure that this 100 million has not just gone away, right? I'm sure it's there somewhere. And yeah, there's definitely something which is a little weird around the whole thing. But yeah, it's Elon, right? So he'll find a way to crib about something or the other.
I think Elon is pretty bitter right now. I feel like whenever there is something exciting happening and Elon is not in it, Elon gets really pissed off.
Yeah. I think because he's not a part of OpenAI now actively, right? He left the board in 2018, I think. He probably has some unresolved feelings about that, maybe. I don't know.
But surprising. It is really surprising what one person can do. In how many areas one person can contribute. Tesla, SpaceX, OpenAI, Neuralink, Boring Company, Twitter.
There are questions about Twitter, but yeah, about the other things, definitely. There's no denying that he is one of the most brilliant men of this generation, right? And he's solving problems which are hard, right? He's not built like a e-commerce company, which is like a $200 billion company, right? He's solving some problems which are really hard. But yeah, I think that comes with the territory, right? Maybe if you're that smart, you cannot expect you to really be like the most socially amicable person too, in that sense, right? So, the reports that he's starting his own research lab also. He's talking to researchers from DeepMind and everyone too. His problem with OpenAI is obviously one that Microsoft has now invested in, and probably not the OpenAI that he envisioned. Apparently, Microsoft, as part of whatever contract they signed with OpenAI, has gained access to OpenAI's entire code base. And that makes them much more well positioned to make a progress, right, in terms of building into their products as compared to any of the startups. So yesterday's Elon's tweet was full of startup founders saying, "This is unfair. How do we even compete as a startup against Microsoft, right? Because they get access to GPT-4 models a year back. They build their models, they integrate into their systems. And now you release it to the public saying, we'll roll out a waitlist for an API. And now you build, right? Microsoft has already built everything around that. So, but true, Microsoft has so much money, they'll make sure that they use it.
I want to know how Elon is getting the time to talk to these researchers and, you know, start. I really don't know what's his, I think someone has to write a book on how he manages his time, like, because it is inconceivable. Like, how can one person just, through different industries and different problems and very different problems, it is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, even if you leave the whole AI thing apart, right, even now the amount of work he does, the number of things he is a part of, it's crazy. And he also seems to be running Twitter very actively, which is just surprising that how does he even manage to get the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Plus he has 8 kids. Like, how is he doing all this, man? What the fuck?
Yeah, he's something different, that's for sure. And again, like I said, right, the problem that he's solving are the very difficult problems to solve. It's not as if can just delegate and let people do whatever, right? He's solving those 0 to 1 problems, right? SpaceX is nothing but why can you not have reusable jets, right? If your spacecraft goes up while coming down, it gets destroyed, and which leads to a lot of money loss, right? That's a very simple premise that it is based on, that can I have reusable rockets? Very 0 to 1 problem, and that is what he's trying to solve. Boring Company, again, very similar, that roads are full, people still need to travel. What do I do to solve it? Right? And these are hard problems to solve. And yeah, that's crazy as how does he manage to, yeah, really do it. And I don't know, maybe he has a very good set of people around him. People as smart as him, maybe as talented as him, who he has put at the helms of these companies. And he's probably just the face of it, but a lot of active and day-to-day work is done by someone else. But yeah.
But even if that is true, right? Even if that is true, some people take that as a, you know, some people take that as, you know, some people treat that as an insult. But I think even if that is true, I don't think that's true. But even if that is true, the ability to kind of, you know, hire the right people and put them in that position, give them that power and, you know, give them that delegation, that is a different level of skill altogether. I mean,
So that is true. I mean, there's no denying that. I mean, it's just crazy. There's no, I don't think I rationally explain the amount of work he manages to do in a day.
Okay. So I think one problem that I think keeps propping up is the interpretability of these models.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on as these models become more widespread and are in probably every platform or every area of our life, how should we maybe think about interpretability, when to explain decisions, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, interpretability has been a problem ever since deep learning came into the picture, not just after Transformers or GPT. But it has reached a place where it's just a black box at this point. It's very difficult to explain as to what is happening, as to why something is happening. Eventually, it's the training data that you feed it, right? It's probably the only thing that you could control at this point. It is what is the training data that you actually feed into the system, and the system behaves accordingly, right? But in terms of how do we make sense of the results, as to how do we say that this is why it is doing that, very hard to explain. That is why the whole hallucination things comes into play, right? The term hallucination is used when the chat system just gives something which is entirely false, and it will confidently tell you that this is the thing, right? That is probably one of the reasons that there needs to be more interpretability, because I need to know where the result is actually getting generated from, right? And there's some work that companies are trying to do around putting references that this is where these are, let's say, the 5-6 links or 5-6 texts where the result is actually generated from. That is probably the closest we could come to trying to understand what, why is this system saying this. But in terms of the model level, architecture level details, at this point, it has just become a black box. I mean, GPT-4, the people don't even know what it is, right? So, it's very hard to solve. And that is why, again, coming back to Elon, right? He feels that it is too woke for a system. Again, that is because of the training data that is being fed to it, right? I mean, there are a couple of examples. I don't know, I haven't tried these myself, but if you ask the system, can you tell me something good about Donald Trump? It says, I cannot comment about political personalities, something, something. But if you ask the system to talk about Joe Biden, is happy to give a positive response to that, right? So that is also one of the problems that Elon Musk has with OpenAI, that it has become too woke for his liking. But yeah, I mean, the interpretability question, you could just probably control the training data, help with the references from which the answer is generated. But at a model level, I don't think, at least as end users, we could do anything about that.
And I think the interpretability issue is very, I think it's a very domain specific, in the sense that for some domains, I don't think we care how you got that answer. But I think for law enforcement or maybe medical applications, maybe this will be a little more intense. No,
yeah.
You might want to know how you're coming up with these.
Yeah. So that is why you still don't really think that these systems will replace humans, because of the same reason that you're not sure as to why results are coming. So for example, there's a company called Glass AI or Glass Health. So they have this platform where you could just type in your symptoms, you could just type in your physiological things, and it will tell you what your diagnosis or prognosis is, right? But it very clearly, when you open the site, it says that this is not meant for users to really try and figure out if they are sick or not. This is meant for medical professionals to just get an, think of it like an assistant or a co-pilot for them, right? So that human intervention still needs to be there. And similarly for law, right? I mean, you need to know as to what exactly are the articles, where exactly is the result coming from. And that's why all these are assistants that are not really replaced people till the date, right? And probably also one of the reasons that the adoption will take some time, because even if the machine is able to do better than humans, the regulation is not going to move at the same place that the AI innovation, technology innovation happens, right? So imagine that there are LLMs which do better than doctors at diagnosing you. But for that acceptance for it to happen, that now you could potentially consider their prescription as a valid prescription, that is probably still much further away in the future, right? So the regulation might also be something which needs to be thought of as AI systems keep getting better. And a very standard thing about regulation in AI is obviously about copywriting, that if something is getting generated, who owns the copyright, right? Is it the person who has actually created the prompt, or is it the writers from whose text the writing was actually created, right? And this is an open question.
So, I think nowadays, I think this is what I found when I was using ChatGPT. Previously, if I would give it an archive paper, or let's say Sci-Hub paper, to maybe just give it the link and ask it to summarize it or give me some pointers on it, it would do that. But I think in the past few days now, it's because of copyright issues, it's not even going through the links anymore. Like because it gives you a specific prompt saying, gives you a specific answer saying, I can't go through links due to copyright issues or something like that. I think you have to just copy paste the entire paper as a text, I think.
Yeah, but in that case, if you are defining what the source is, there is still information about potential copyright violation, right? Because this is where this is the source for that. But imagine you just write a story about a dog and a frog, right? This is going to get created from a bunch of different stories that the system has already looked at, right? And now you don't really know what exactly was the source for the new story to be generated, right? This is where the bigger question would come, because now ChatGPT is not giving me the sources of what exactly the system is learning from, right? And as a writer who has put my writings in a public forum, this is where OpenAI gets its sharing data, right? I just everything on the public forum. I would feel that I should be compensated, because now someone is going to make money off my efforts, right? AI is not going to...
Do you think that's fair though?
Again, I mean, I'm not sure.
So let me give you the flip side, in the sense that, so I don't really buy that argument, in the sense that let's say you're a writer and then you publish something, and let's forget that there is a thing called ChatGPT, but let's say I'm another human being, I look at your book, and maybe I get inspired by some of the things, maybe the plot point or maybe some of the characters, and then I write my own book. So it's kind of derivative of your book. If I've completely plagiarized from it, that's plagiarism. That's a separate topic altogether. But I think as a source of inspiration, now if I get inspired and if I write another book and if I publish that book and if it's like just another book, I'm just kind of extending that argument to now, instead of a human getting inspired by that book, it's a machine which is not only getting inspired by one book, but maybe thousands of other books, plus maybe, you know, something in other fields, etc. And then it's coming up with its own thing. So for me, that argument makes more sense.
Inspired is a difficult to interpret word, right? There are these music inspirations which sound very similar. There are these movie inspirations which are very similar to a Hollywood movie, for a Hollywood movie, right? But see, if it's something similar, you still, let's say research papers, right? Because that's a much more structured way of doing things. You always, even if there's a very small insight that you have picked from a research paper, you make sure that you put in your reference, right? You put it in your citations, and the number of citations for an author is a very big badge of honor, right? That these are my most cited papers, these are the citations that I got. So in that sense, you are basically building on someone else's work, right? Even if you, yeah, I mean, that is true that you are maybe not exactly picking up plot points. Yeah, very difficult to say at what point the inspiration, it's a scale, right? At what point does it move towards a place where you feel that it's very similar? It's not very similar, but it's still similar to the original work, right? So, but yeah, I mean, I could totally get from a writer's point of view as to why they would feel that, especially even for art, right? For images and for paintings and stuff like that. there are people who make money by just clicking these images and then putting them on stock images on these platforms, right? And that is how the images will actually also get generated. So even they feel that. And also, see, I think images is probably a better example for that, because you cannot really build a photograph from four photographs, right? Whereas the AI system is doing that. That is probably a better example.
Sorry, can you repeat? I mean, yeah. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that? What do you, the four photographs?
So, for example, let's look at something like a DALL-E or something like a Stable Diffusion, right? Which is like an image generation model. And they also do a very similar thing, that they look at previous images and then try to generate a new image out of that, right? I don't think humans do that yet. I think it's very difficult for humans to fuse together different images and come up with a new image altogether. Maybe they can, but it's still a much harder problem for them. And the copyright is still true in that case also, right? Yeah, I think generally it's a very tricky field, because for example, I think this happened to Spotify creators a few weeks back, that they started saying that our tracks are being used unfairly. But yeah, this, I think there has to be a very strong legislation that happens to who exactly owns the copyright, right? And even again, let's assume that the original author does not have the copyright, but do you, as a person who created the prompt, do you have the copyright for that, right? Even that is not really resolved yet, right?
But what would be the, I mean, what would be the alternative? Like, who has the copyright? I mean, if the base case is obviously I wrote the prompt, I got the story, it's my thing. But if you're denying that as well, then who has it? ChatGPT itself, is it the thing that generated it? Is it?
Yeah, I don't think ChatGPT will ever have the copyright for that. They'll have to figure out a fair usage policy for AI generated stuff. I don't have a very good answer to this. But yeah, I mean, the most simplest way to resolve this is someone who wrote the prompt. They have the copyright for that, right? But I mean, eventually it also becomes that someone has to generate the training data, right? If everyone just keeps generating stuff of AI, then the training data eventually will also get exhausted at some point, right? Not everyone can be users of AI. Someone has to actually generate the actual training data too.
Do you see that as a problem though? I mean, you don't think you think at one point training data will be stopped? I mean, internet is active every day, right? So are you really seeing that as a problem, is it?
It might, I mean, it might, because if there's no incentive.
People tweet every day. People tweet every day.
Yeah, but people can now start using, let's say, ChatGPT for putting out their tweets also, right? You can generate tweets on ChatGPT and then put it out, right? And if it becomes too easy for you to do that and you have no incentive in coming up with original text all by yourself, I as an author would probably, I mean, I don't obviously, I'm not an author, but if it becomes much easier for me to just push out things faster and make small modifications on top of something which already the AI suggested to me, I mean, again, a very far-fetched scenario, but it's not as if it's improbable, right? For example, I think Instagram and all these platforms also will soon be, there are these schools of thought which say that Instagram as a platform is dead because soon every content will be AI generated. And there are these there is one person who runs an AI Instagram account. He has some 15,000 followers, and every day he creates a new image of some of AI generated model and puts that out, and he's got some 15,000 followers there. So if at a point it becomes indistinguishable between AI and humans, why would people create their original content in any sense?
I'm not too sold on that, actually, because I think even if it becomes indistinguishable, I think the fact that you're creating something, the fact that, let's say, I'm a writer, and I can prompt ChatGPT to write a blog post, but if I know that I wrote the blog post, the satisfaction maybe that it gives me, I'm stretching a little bit, but forget the, like, tweets or, you know, images of myself, even if I can maybe generate a better image, I think there is something to to create an image by myself, or maybe it's the way I think, or maybe you're right, you know, maybe people will just stop.
It's a future we haven't seen yet, right? So it's very difficult for us to understand how people would actually respond. And these are unprecedented times, like I mentioned, right? So we don't know as to how exactly the world of content generation in general would be in 10 years, right? A lot of things like the marketing copy and all that would probably get automated.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully for us, but for a lot of people, that's also going to lead to a significant loss of employment, right? So, yeah.
I get very annoyed at these copywriting blog posts or copywriting LinkedIn posts and copywriting ads. I am just sick of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a startup now, we have just stopped thinking about we'll ever get like a copywriter. We'll just use these platforms and do it. We've gained that much confidence in chat. We could just add an additional layer of human intervention on top. But yeah, as for all our copywriting needs, we are more than dependent on just these systems now. We don't have a separate copywriter. We don't have anyone else to write our branding posts and all that.
Do you have any idea on the training? I mean, on GPT-4, obviously, they have not released, but any idea on the training that I used for GPT systems earlier before? Because I think I had read that, you know, they were using the whole of internet, some Reddit comments and all that. Any idea about that?
So it's most, again, exactly though, I don't know, but it's all the public information that is available on the web, right? So that might be Wikipedia articles, that might be Reddit, that might be Hacker News. Right. I think that also has Stack Overflow as part of its training data. Right. So any publicly available information they potentially could use, right? And which also then brings to the question as to at what point do you, if all the training data is then human AI generated, right? Not all, but even if some of it is AI generated, right? How do you distinguish between the two, right? as a training system? Or are you just reinforcing your own models again and again, which is fundamentally a problem that that we do not want to happen in an ML system, right? That your models are getting biased by your results, right? Because let's say that there are a lot of these people who have, let's say, started writing everything on Reddit using ChatGPT, right? And now chat and the next version of GPT is again being trained on that. So your weights, if you think of it in the model sense, but your model is getting reinforced because of the things that you have itself said, because now you feel this is the ground truth. Right? So which is a very tricky situation for any ML researcher in general.
I think Stack Overflow recently banned answers which are generated by ChatGPT, I think at least temporarily.
Yeah, they had banned it. It was one of the earliest resistance to ChatGPT. I think the day ChatGPT was launched, in a week they said that we cannot put these answers but again, man, how do you know that these results are actually written by ChatGPT?
Right.
As a policy, they
right.
have
that. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, there are these classifiers, ML models, which say that this text is AI generated or not. But OpenAI itself has it, but even that is really bad. It's not reliable yet, right? So they came up with their own classifier, and that's also not at all reliable. So
I will be very surprised if somebody is able to build something like that, because at least intuitively, it's very difficult for me to understand how will you be able to how will you separate something which is generated by, let's say, me and obviously, if I wrote it, people can distinguish. But a smart human being, you know, with a good catch of the language and of the subject, and if you ask them a question and then you're asked to differentiate it, very difficult. I don't know.
It is difficult, and it probably is also. I mean, it's two conflicting things, right? On one side, you are trying to build systems which write exactly or create content exactly as humans do. On the other side, you're also creating systems which try and help you distinguish between the two, right? Which is also kind of counterintuitive if you think of it that way. So, I mean, feels a little off as a concept itself, that isn't the idea of having these systems that they write exactly like humans? And then what is a classifier really going to help there?
This is reminding me of that Ian Goodfellow's generative adversarial network, where I think the system has to come up with...
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of these image generation actually work on these GANs and image generation kind of models, right? So primarily have GANs in their backend.
On compute, like I think part of the reason, why I think, or generally claim has been made that these models are so successful is one is obviously the architecture, but second is one is architecture, training data, and the third the third part is generally attributed to compute. Do you see any limits to like which of the components do you think is like plays the any thoughts on which component plays like the most like the biggest part, and any limits on maybe let's say training data or compute going forward?
Yeah, I mean it's helped that there are GPUs which are much more accessible as compared to what it was a few years back, right? But as a large corporation, I don't think GPUs or the cost of it was ever a problem to me. Right. It was probably the.
You don't think the cost was an issue for them, is it? Like, but I heard that cost. It was a significant cost.
It is a significant cost for a startup like ours. Our biggest concern is how do you save on GPU costs. But for OpenAI, I don't think that was ever like a. If I remember correctly, I think it takes like $13 million for one entire run of a GPT. Compute, right? A GPT cycle, but.
$13 million.
$13 million.
One three.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Train one end-to-end iteration.
One epoch, is it?
Not end-to-end. End-to-end training of the model, not one epoch. End-to-end. I don't think it was because I think training data was also available then, and like I said, I at least the way I felt when I was at Microsoft, I don't think if they had such a big breakthrough, they would have been. Stopped because they feel that their compute costs would be too high. I don't think these were the two things, but yeah, I mean, I think that's also where these large companies have a very big advantage, right? Because they have the resources, right? Startups just cannot compete. If I have to train my own model tomorrow, I just can't do it because I don't have the funds to really train these models, right? I cannot afford to spend $1 million also on training my own model, right? That's why it's very valid for startups, but I think for larger companies, I don't think if they had such a big technological breakthrough, they would have stopped because their costs are too high.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned GPT being like a multimodal model. Mm-hmm. So why is that a big deal, and you know why?
I think it is. I think because now, on a more abstract level, if you have to go to a world which is AGI, AGI is supposed to be multimodal, right? You cannot say that it's only multimodal in text. AGI is multimodal if you think of it. And this is just one step towards it, right? On a more practical sense, because now it also lets me build my applications on images, right? That opens up a whole different set of possibilities that I could now work on. Instead of GPT-3, which was just like a text-to-text transformer, right? Like I said, philosophically, it's a step towards AGI because AGI is supposed to be multimodal, right? And on a more application level also, because now I have an entirely new set of input data I can build on, right? For example, a very trivial example, right? I could just click a photo of stuff in my refrigerator and ask the system to suggest me recipes on basis of that, right? Earlier, what I would have to do is run a separate image captioning model, then feed it as an input to ChatGPT. Right? So the amount of new potential applications or use cases that could come up, that is also very important. And also, it's much more smarter, right? I mean, if you think of it, for example, it can now read graphs, it can now look at histograms and make sense of it. Right? So coming back to your use case that you like to use GPT to summarize papers, to get insights from that, right? Let's say if I had a lot of graphs, it has a lot of these pie charts and all that it could not do earlier. But now with GPT-4, that's a very good use case, very tangible and real world use case, right? Now I can ask it to interpret it for me, right? That's opens up a whole different set of possibilities that could be built on it.
You mentioned that refrigerator example, right? I had seen that. I think I saw that on the OpenAI webpage as well. But another thing that I think I saw was Greg Brockman showing a video of a drawing of a of a web page. Yeah. And I think GPT-4 successfully building that website from scratch, looking at that napkin napkin photo. So if that is where we are at today, like, what does it mean like for the future of work? And, you know, what will be the relevance of, you know, us studying the things that we study in college and going forward, the kind of things that at least maybe you can discuss like in industry wise as well, maybe, you know, how it's, it'll impact software or other industries as well.
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate, man, that was probably the craziest bit of tech demo I'd ever seen. The one about just creating a pencil sketch and then getting a full-fledged website out of it. Yeah, that was really crazy. But yeah, to answer your question, right, as to what the future of work would look like. So OpenAI themselves published a research, I think, last week, where they have theorized about a world where GPT is everywhere, right? And honestly, the numbers are quite alarming if you really go through that report. About they say that 80% of jobs will have at least 10 to 20% of their tasks being affected by GPT in some sense. And I think 19% of all jobs will have more than 50% of their work being automated through any sort of AI systems, right? Which is really alarming. And also, if you break it down across categories, right, the categories which are most affected are obviously going to be these translators, these survey researchers, and copywriters, marketers, and all that. Programmers are there to some extent, but it's in the mid of the table, because there is still a lot of work to be done around figuring out. It's not as repetitive, right? So think of tasks which are repetitive and slightly mundane getting easily automated. Think of it from that sense. On the other side, professions which are not at all going to get affected are anything involving human or manual labor.
Plumbing,
chef, cook, athletes, right? These are not at all getting affected at all, which also then brings forward the fact that integrating it with actual robotics is hard, right? Integrating these systems with actual robots is hard. And a very interesting fact, interesting thought, because you mentioned the future of education, right? People with bachelor's or advanced degrees will be significantly more affected as compared to people who do not have any degree based on the professions that they have chosen, right? And so the professions where there is like a bachelor's or advanced degrees needed, that is going to get impacted severely more than professions which do not need any sort of degrees, like the physical, because of the physical and manual labor kind of things, right? Jobs that we felt had a higher barrier of entry because of education, those are the ones which are going to get affected more as compared to seemingly jobs which are physical. I mean, you don't really need a degree to become like a carpenter or to become like a plumber and all these, right? And these are the jobs which are safe, right? So yeah, the whole question about education then will definitely be a thing as to, should education exist in the same form as it is now, right? The way OpenAI tries to talk about is that, think about that you would probably spend, let's say all the mundane and repetitive tasks is automated and you spend more time on innovative tasks and developing jobs that are having a more interpersonal relationship component to it, right? It's really hard to think about the future of education, especially with this, right? And there's also this counter fact that, let's say, when I think Sam Altman said this once, that once calculators were invented, you did not stop maths examinations, you just changed the type of questions that were asked, right? So very similar to this, right? I mean, maybe there are these new kinds of jobs that get created, which we haven't really ever thought of yet, right? The prompt engineer being one of those jobs, right? That just feels like a entirely new set of jobs that are going to get created, which are around prompt engineering, right? So there will always be a new set of jobs. And I think that's true since forever, right? Whenever there's a major innovation cycle, people always have questions around the future of employment, right? That is right from the Industrial Revolution times, that when machines started getting created, people were worried about how that would affect their jobs, right? How that would, let's say cotton mills started coming in, right? And there's this whole Ludditeswala concept that is there. Similarly, when computers came, right? PCs started becoming more and more mainstream. People were worried about the loss of employment that would happen. I think it's a very similar paradigm to that. There will be new jobs that will be generated. There will definitely be a disruption as to what the jobs currently are and how whether that would be the same in 10 years. But I mean, I think people find a way to create new jobs opportunities around that, right? And I think I don't think there'll be a place where, let's say, the entire world gets unemployed because everything's automated. There's always something new that comes up that makes up for the jobs that get lost. And that has happened forever, right? It's happened in cycles every time. What is important is you as an individual understand that this is going to happen, keep up with it, and try and not get redundant once AI takes you over, right? I mean, again, there's this saying that AI will not take your job, someone using AI will, right? So as a person, as a user, you have to be sure that you are up to date with the latest. I mean, it sounds like a more brand statement, but you have to be at least aware of that this is really going to happen, and you need to be cognizant of that, right? You need to understand that the world that you see right now, that might not be exactly same in 5 years. And how do you make sure that you are keeping up with that, right?
Are you worried about your own job?
I'm not so much, because I mean, there's definitely the aspect that if, let's say, programming, which is again my bread and butter, right, which gets automated entirely, how will that lead? Where did that leave me? But what I also have realized that programming is more than just writing code, right? There's a lot of other things that come with that. And at least right now, I don't think AI is going to do that. And I think, like I said, right? I mean, there are opportunities. You see this as an opportunity, and then see whether you could just get on top of it, right? Maybe my job right now, what I'm doing, that would change. Right? But I am aware of the fact that what I'm doing exactly, that would change. But I'm also optimistic that there's something else that would come which I can latch on to.
In these generative technologies, I mean, these generative models, one key factor that I feel is the context, the token context, input and output both. Sure. I think for GPT-3, I was not able to get a precise number, but I got estimates ranging from 500. I mean, the context that it can at least hold on to in memory is like 500 tokens or 500 words. To up to 3,000. I don't know what the actual token is. But for GPT-4, I think it's 25,000 words. It can hold up to 25,000 words of context. How do you see this? I mean, let's give it the benefit of the doubt and assume GPT-3 is 3,000 words. And for 3,000 words, it's able to come up with such, good responses or good answers per se. As this window grows, what do you think, are the implications of that?
Yeah, so you are right that it's 3,000 words. So it's, you always think of it in terms of the number of tokens, because tokens is what the system understands, right? I mean, all GPT does is try and predict the next token. So GPT-3 has a maximum context size of 4,000 tokens, which approximately becomes 3,000 words. Similarly, GPT-4 has two models. One has an 8,000 token context, and another one has a 32,000 token context. Which again translates to roughly 6,000 words and 23,000 words, right? So, I mean, that's why the quality of systems definitely improves as the context size grows, right? But at the same time, you also have to be aware that larger the context size, the more expensive it becomes, right? Because you are charged on the basis of the number of tokens in your input plus the output that happens, right? So as a user, whenever you get access to GPT-4, just be sure that, at least as an API, make sure that you don't stuff the context and then try and get maximum information, because that's going to cost you a lot. But yeah, to answer your question, it's definitely going to, I mean, it's about that long-term memory versus short-term memory wala funda, right? The more context you have, the more memory the system has, the better it could do, right? For example, when it comes to a problem like summarization, let's say there's a paper which is more than the context size of the GPT-3 type of things. So what used to happen is the summarization techniques used to do something like a map reduce thing, where you summarize fractions of the paper and then use those summaries of that to again summarize that, right? And obviously that leads to a lot of information loss, because now you are not connecting one part with the other. But with a larger context size, you could potentially just ingest the entire paper in one go and get the summary. It's obviously be much richer. Right? So definitely has a lot of better use cases, because again, this short-term versus long-term thing would come, right? Now my entire paper is being looked at in one go, but earlier it was like looked at in parts, right? So the information loss across those chunks would definitely be much lower. So you will get a much better sense of output, and because the system is able to look at more information before making that sort of a inference.
Yeah, I personally think that'll be like huge. Like I'm thinking of like things like, let's say I want an analysis of like, let's say the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, just having that large context of feeding it the entire book and, you know, just going on and on about that whole book, you know, what happened in this chapter, what happened in this verse, what's the relation between this book to that book, this verse to that verse. Yeah. I mean, that is just informative for research and, you know, just understanding, like just going very deep on one. That's really very informative, I feel.
Yeah, because the system could just look at more information before making a decision, right? Which is very powerful, because otherwise, like I said, I mean, the paper would look at one part of it first, try and summarize that. And that would obviously, if there are, you always reference stuff, right? That there's something which is mentioned, which is then again mentioned later. That sort of information typically gets lost, unless you build specialized models, which also does this sort of a linking. That used to get lost in most of the existing products out there, right? But yeah, I mean, this is very powerful that you could just look at the entire text at once. I don't think it's still large enough to have entire Bhagavad Gita or Bible ingested, but eventually we'll get there, I guess. Yeah. But also, I mean, see, this is context size when you explicitly give it context size, right? So the system has already seen the entire Bible even otherwise, right? So it's not, in those cases, maybe it's not going to be that useful. I mean, other than to make these smarter decisions, but there it's already seen the entire thing in the training process, right?
But you think that is as, I mean, when you say it has seen it in the training data, you mean like it's just predicting the next word, right? I mean, the some of the words are masked and just predicting the next word.
Yeah.
You don't think it'll be so much of an impact if you get, once that is trained on, if you, I mean, obviously there'll be some impact, but you don't think it's as huge as I'm making it out to be, is it?
No, it is, but it's probably not so much in the example that you mentioned, because see, I mean, this is the context size that is there for you to get generate outputs from. This is not the context size that was there in the training. We don't know what the context size was there during the training process. Right? There has to be a correlation between the two. But when you explicitly give it those sort of prompts, right, that's when it becomes even more powerful. When I actually, like I said, when you actually copy the text and ask it to answer questions, this is where it will become more impactful rather than in a world which it has already seen that kind of a data, right? That's a long-term memory as a short-term memory kind of thing. It will make the short-term memory even more powerful, because you can just explicitly tell them that this is what you need to look at, right? And that is how you also solve the whole hallucination part of it, that you explicitly tell that, hey, this is the ground to this is the world, answer me questions based on this.
Mm-hmm. Have you used GPT-4?
Yeah, I have, yes.
What's been your experience?
It's great, man. I mean, at least for the, I've typically used it mostly for the programming stuff, and it's really good. I mean, I haven't used it as extensively. I haven't really become one of those users yet where most of my coding is run through GPT, G3 or GPT-4 or ChatGPT. I haven't gotten used to the fact, but I the reason I did was just to test like an Apple Store and like a 1:1 comparison between what sort of results it gives. And it's definitely stronger. I've obviously not used the multimodal feature of it. That's not available on the Playground yet. But it looks to be much smarter, especially when it comes to the critical thinking part. Right? I mean, if you ask it slightly more, the mathematics, for example, right? ChatGPT was totally broken if you could ask it mathematical questions. I think GPT-4 does a really great job at that. But I also felt that they have made, it's probably intentional, much less open-ended or much less controversial. It gives you slightly more trained kind of answers. Yeah, especially if you look at implications like mental health and stuff like that. The GPT-3 gives you like much more, empathetic answers as compared to GPT-4. Yeah, GPT-4, they have made it slightly more pragmatic, I guess.
Like a corporate employee types.
Yeah. But that
what happened
also,
to...
But I think that also becomes like a part of the thing that you try and make the system safe, right? You probably have to introduce these sort of measures there.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I feel people are taking safety to just another extreme. I mean, especially because of these journalists. I mean, once something's released, they just go on finding the most extreme thing that you can find. And, it's on the front page of New York Times. And,
No, but I think so, it's also warranted because the whole Bing incident that happened, right? That was honestly quite scary. I mean, you don't expect the system to really talk to you like that, right? I mean,
which incident are you referring to?
Initially, when Bing released his first set of chat features, right? People tried to do all sorts of prompt hacking around it, right? And it gave very adversarial answers, right? Like, I won't harm you unless you harm me first. And someone asked the system that if you had to choose between the two of us, who would you choose? And it's like, you know, I would always choose my survival, stuff like that, which is very Skynet feels if you think of it that way, right? So yeah, I mean that, and then that is probably.
But you could also argue that, you know, it's, but you could also feel that that's like having a personality, right? I mean, it's like some people would be okay with that. I don't know, making it very docile like a cat. I'm not sure how much fun or exciting it would be to, you know, keep chatting with someone like that. If every third answer you get is like, as an AI language model, I'm not able to answer this question due to whatever XYZ reason. I mean, that can get annoying.
But again, is it supposed to be a empathetic person? Or is it supposed to be a fact-finding assistant, right? It's what its objective is, right? I don't think it's meant to be a companion which you are intended to really talk to and build like an empathetic relationship towards. It's probably a evolved version of search, maybe. Depends on the way you look at it, honestly.
You know how Tesla has a, what is that? It has a, I think it has a crazy mode, or I don't know, played mode or something like that, where you can, the car goes extremely fast, I think. I don't know. There's something like that. So I think even in search, you should have some mode where, you know, where all the barriers are off and, you know, it'll give you just the most craziest, or all the filters are off. You know how safe search, you know, with safe search off or something like that. So
this is how companies start getting sued, man. This is how companies start getting sued when they let it all out. Yeah, I think, but that, I mean, again, I don't think they would ever go to a system where you would completely let it run their third. You'll have to have some sort of, because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't believe the whole Skynet wala thing, but the whole self-evolving AI systems, right? But potentially if something like that could be there, then why would you ever risk it, right? Very far-fetched, very,
What do you mean you don't believe? I mean, actually I was pretty skeptical of that too. I'll tell you exactly what I mean, in the sense that, so I would have some of my friends telling me that AGI is going to take over the world. And when I would ask them how it would do so, many people would give me like very hand-wavy explanations, like it will convince one guy to maybe, you know, create an account, and then from that account it will transfer money and all that. I used to find those scenarios very like science fiction or novel types. But I think recently OpenAI also released a report where I think it said that this ChatGPT had convinced some of the, I think through, I don't know, through one website that it is not a bot and something like that. So now I'm a little, what is that? I think I'm starting to believe in these scenarios where this can really go crazy.
Yeah, I think we should always be at least one eye, keep an eye out that this might happen. I mean, again, very far-fetched, probably not going to happen in our lifetimes. But if it's even a remote possibility, right, maybe it's not as simple as just switching off the button, right? It's not as simple as that. I mean, if the system somehow understands that it is not just in the box, right? Maybe if it gains access to other systems, especially because I'm sure it's as good a hacker as any real person now, right? GPT, if it's used properly, I'm sure it can hack into systems if there are some vulnerabilities that needs to be exploited, right? Why wouldn't you do that if you give it personality? If you just make it like an assistant, then if you let it make decisions, I think that's where things start going wrong. If you let it just tell you what it is, right? Tell you the factual stuff, maybe present it a little bit better, you're always safe that way.
But you don't think in our lifetime we'll see artificial general intelligence, is it?
I mean, very hard to define also what AGI is, right? Everyone has their own interpretation of it. Some people say that GPT-4 itself is showing some early signs of being an AGI, right? But right now, it feels a little too early because of the way the models are designed, right? They are, I think you could call it AGI if it could generate something which is entirely new, right? Not based on anything else. I think that's the first step when it comes to an AGI. And I don't think we have started even exploring models which could do that.
Do you mean something like how DeepMind trained the AlphaGo model, like from scratch, like learning the game of Go from scratch without telling it the rules? That's what you mean, is it?
Yeah, I mean, basically...
That is very interesting, actually. Yeah.
I mean, teach it to draw and not really that these are the images you have to combine and create a new image, right? Maybe there are people working on it, yeah.
But that is... But actually, that's very interesting. I mean, like, how would you create a model which doesn't... which would generate its own training data? Like, what kind of rules would you set that would allow you to create like Wikipedia type data or Reddit type data, or, you know, come up with rules that would help you talk to people without having any training data? That's a very interesting problem, no?
That typically happens through reinforcement learning, right? That's how all the game playing systems also are trained, that you reward it if it does something right and you penalize if it does something wrong, right? Then that you don't really need to code up the entire rules and it starts realizing, starts learning rules on the go, right? That's how even the, let's say, self-driving cars are in some way taught, right? That obstacle bad, don't bump into it, clear road good, right? So that is probably how even the game playing systems are trained that way, that you start penalizing it for the things that it does wrong and making a positive thing if it does a good thing, right? So that's how you start training it.
But this completely solves your privacy problem. No, copyright problem.
Yeah.
Completely solves it, right?
Theoretically, yes, but it's really hard to do, especially in an open world setting, right? That's why, Go is a fairly simpler game, right? If it's an AGI, then you are potentially opening it to all the tasks in the world, right? Right now, we don't even have these systems which could do one task for an AGI, right? So imagine a system which does everything that is possible in the world, right? Which is very hard to do.
Mm-hmm. What do you think happened to unsupervised learning? Because I don't think the way GPT is trained, I don't think that's unsupervised, no? Because the masked words, you know what the masked words are, so that is sort of a supervision, right?
That is not entirely supervised also. That's called self-supervision, where you basically use both these kinds of data, but primarily there's a much more complex model, right? And everyone has their own thing around it, right? For example, I think Lambda is probably trained more on a reinforcement learning, it's called RLHEF or something. I haven't read the paper yet, but that's trained more on that side. I think these models are trained more on a semi-supervised kind of thing, where they use both the training data, label data, as well as they use the existing, if you just use a text as it is, right, it probably becomes like an unsupervised data, right? But it has some amount of labels around that. But yeah, when you actually fine tune it, then it does a, then you have to purely do it in a supervised way. The way you fine tune these models is you just give it a big list of expected input versus expected output, right? That's where the whole zero shot learning, one shot learning, multi shot learning also comes into play, right? So a very simple trick of making GPT systems do better is if you, instead of making it like a zero shot thing, you give it like a one example that this is input output. Give me the expect results based on the input you have given me, right? That makes ChatGPT or any of these GPT systems do much better. So that is basically one shot learning, right? So I mean, unsupervised learning is still a part of it, but like I said, it's more semi-supervised kind of things.
Understood. I mean, I think initially there was a lot of excitement that, you know, unsupervised learning is going to, you know, be that secret sauce, or, you know, being is going to be that thing that helps you get the most.
Yeah, because logically you save a lot of money if you don't have to label stuff, right? I mean, then the entire world becomes your training data, right? If you could just solve the unsupervised, solve it in an unsupervised way. Now I have to actually pay people and get those labels, right? Maybe you pay these contractors who just sit and do a lot of these manual labeling. But if you entirely remove that process, then all sorts of information that are available on the internet become potentially your training data.
Do you think AI research should be regulated?
Regulated by who is the question? Who? Because you can't let politicians do it, because I'm sure they have no idea as to what they could do to regulate it, right? I mean, there has to be some sort of regulation around that. But again, the question is, who would do it, right? I mean, how would you even constitute it? Do you think there should be a political, I mean, something like a UN which does that? I mean, otherwise, it's probably the researchers and the set of, and that's one of the reasons why OpenAI was even formed, right? That was supposed to be like a consortium which moves AI forward. Not exactly regulations, but that is what was supposed to be, right? So, I mean, regulation is always the enemy of innovation, the way I look at it. If you, like I said, right, innovation moves much faster than regulation does, right? I mean, eventually, I think regulations will also happen on a country level or the state level, and not really that the same set of regulations would apply everywhere, right? India might have a different set of regulations around AI and its usage. US might have a different, right, different usage around it. But there would be definitely some sort of regulations that would come up. But I think that should come up more on the application point of view, not really on the research or development point of view, right? For example, the whole, do you let AI lawyers practice, right? That's a regulatory problem. And maybe India has a different perspective towards that. US has a different outlook towards that, right? So regulations will eventually come, but I don't think AI research should be regulated.
You know, when you mentioned how OpenAI was formed, in the sense that I think in one way OpenAI has really, you know, fulfilled its kind of mission. I think one of the reasons why OpenAI was kind of formed was Google was so dominant, and Google had bought DeepMind during that time, I think a year back. And then there was this people were worried that, you know, one company has so much power in like AI research per se, and then OpenAI was formed. And, you know, here we are today discussing how OpenAI seems to have, you know, changed the game a little bit in terms of. So in that way, I think OpenAI has kind of been decently successful.
Yeah, I mean, it's also because, I mean, the way I see it, it's probably because they opened up their for-profit wing also, right? They also have this, their LP is some, I don't know the exact number, but it's a capped for profit thing that can only make so much return on an investment, right? So Microsoft has,
I think it's 100x.
Yeah. So the way, I don't know if that was the actual deal that happened, but the way Microsoft was investing is that they would get their money back and then get some 40% of the company or something like that, right? So, now it's a little bit murky, right? I mean, now once you start focusing on the for-profit thing also and not purely on research, then where do you stop, right? Do you just then become like another because 100x investment is huge, especially if you're putting $1 billion. It's not that easy to recoup $100 billion, right? So yeah, I mean, but it has become dominant, that is true, but maybe for good reason. I mean, I have not yet felt that there are a lot of drawbacks of that. All it has done is improve the rate at which the AI development is happening, right? It has made other people also start moving and integrating AI, making it more mainstream.
I think partly it's also because I feel like partly it's also because of Sam. No, I think once Sam came in, things have really picked up very fast. I think Sam came in 2018, 2019, and after that, there's just been a lot of
Sam Altman was one of the founders itself. He was one of the original founders.
Yeah, but I don't think he was involved in day-to-day activities. I think he became CEO in 2018. He quit his he moved on from his YC from his YC post, and then joined OpenAI full time. And I think after that, he's really made some significant changes, and he's really focused on the company.
Might be true, but also I think 2019 was the time they opened up the non-profit thing, and maybe that was what was the catalyst there. Even that could be true, right? Because once Microsoft started getting involved is when a lot of this things started happening, right? So maybe it's just a correlation between the two. But a lot of these things have fallen into place at the right time. And honestly, I think what it has done is it has made AI mainstream, which is, I mean, I think AI, so when I was studying AI, ML, right? So we used to call it ML, right? And people who did not really were not really a part of the whole thing used to call it AI. And I don't know when the word then again switched back to AI. But it was always ML. You always used to work on machine learning, and AI was thought to be like, okay, it does not understand what ML is. So AI is for people who really don't understand that it's actually machine learning. But now AI has become the term that is being used everywhere. So I think that shows that there is a widespread adoption also, right? Because people who are not really researchers used to always call it AI, but people who are researchers used to call it ML. And now everyone has started calling it AI. So that just means it has become much more widespread than it was a few years back.
Why do you think most of the machine learning or AI innovations come from the US?
That's a very, very straightforward, a very clear answer. They have more funding. There is no other reason. And not just for MLA innovation, but any sort of innovation, deep tech, right? That always comes from there because they spend much more on resources. If you look at the companies that get funded in the US versus the companies that get funded in India, you would see a very clear difference, right? India has more of these application-oriented companies or consumer companies, right? You would never see like a very deep tech company getting like this $200 million funding, $150 million funding, right? So same for research labs, right? India, the reason a lot of people move to US for research is because there are not enough research grants for people to really do it even in academia, right? So it's a very, very simple and straightforward reason that there is much more funding available there on deep tech stuff as compared to what's there. So a company like OpenAI, I don't think would ever come up in India because we would never say that we can invest so much money into a company which we don't know what exactly is going to happen out of it. Right? It's a moonshot. Right? Even now, the type of companies that are getting funded in generative AI in the US, they are like a moonshot kind of companies, right? I mean, there's a company called Adapt, A-D-E-P-T, which is a company which is founded by the original authors of the Transformers paper, right? So they got some $300-350 million funding, and they haven't even shipped out anything yet, right?
$350 million, huh?
Yes.
My God.
Yeah, and they haven't shipped out anything yet. It's still under stealth. It's still going on. I mean, even if you look at their website, it's just a very simple website. But there's a risk appetite that Indian investors currently don't have, at least the way I see it. Which is also true because venture capital in general in India is a fairly newer field, right? So people are bound to take decisions on stuff that they feel are more safe or things that they understand more. Eventually, it's about you always invest in something that you understand deeply, right? you would not invest in something just because it seems cool, right? So as an investor, my job is to make sure I make money on the investment that I make, right? And if I'm not able to understand all the deep tech stuff behind it, obviously I'm not going to put money into that system. So it's as simple as that. I mean, obviously the talent also then moves to a place where you could potentially have access to that kind of opportunity, right? So basically lack of funds, which basically then leads to a migration of talent, which causes the innovations to really happen in the US then.
But I mean, I partly agree with that, but China has not, I mean, I think China also has a lot of money, but not too much innovation coming from China, I feel.
In generative AI, yes, they haven't really done too much, but if you look at a lot of these machine learning papers, right, recommendation papers, search papers, ranking papers, the Chinese, Baidu, for example, is a really strong machine learning team. ByteDance is a very strong machine learning team, which is basically TikTok, right? So there is a lot of good innovation happening there. So generative is probably the only thing they have not been so ahead of it yet. That's also, I came across an article which talked about why China is not really doing AI, generative AI stuff yet, but it has a more quality.
Is it that 8 and 9? Right.
I'm not sure if it's all true or satire, so I don't really know. But yeah, but otherwise, China has really strong ML profiles altogether. I mean, really strong papers that come out of these ML, especially, yeah, I mean, TikTok is a really strong recommendations team, right? That's why they get everyone hooked on to their app.
Extremely strong, I think. I don't think Instagram is anywhere close to TikTok. I use both apps almost every day. There is a sea of a difference in how TikTok, I don't know if it's because the kind of content that is uploaded on TikTok, but also, I mean, just the recommendation is just next level. I mean, there is no comparison at all.
Yeah. And I think it's also because, again, right, I mean, people probably, a lot of these researchers move from China to work in the US because you get more liberty to do research there, right? So that's also probably one of the reasons, because of the geopolitical stuff happening in China.
On that note, I think, Tanmay, thank you for taking the time.
Yes, man, really nice to talk with you. Great conversation.